Good morning, everyone. Jesus and his disciples would not recognize the Garden of Gethsemane today. It is still overlooked by the heights of Jerusalem and the foot of the Mount of Olives, but the garden is small, fenced and tidy, yet full of noise from the sirens of police vehicles and the air conditioning generators of the coaches parked, ready to move their tourists onward. At least, that is how it was when I was there many years ago. Some of the olive trees are very old, but they're not what Jesus might have seen. And visiting today is a rushed experience with little to inspire, except one thing. It is a place to watch and pray for Jesus. And this is what Jesus commanded his disciples to do. They are to watch and to pray. He seemed to be warning them to get ready. He needs their awareness of what he is going through. They too were on the edge of a great testing that needed them to be prepared in prayer. And for us who find it as hard as those original disciples to stay there with him and not to rush on to some other experience of life, we must ask, why did he stay there? And what does it mean for us to stay there with him today? What does it mean to stay with him when we are going through great trials or temptations? To find the answer, we must go back to that strange saying about the cup, which casts its dark shadow over the scene in the garden. We need to look at the words, the emotions, and the actions of Jesus. In Mark 10, verse 38, Jesus had said to James and to John, his disciples, "Can you drink the cup that I drink? Can you be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" They wanted to share his kingly power, of course, to sit either side of his kingly throne. And Jesus was trying to tell them that it wasn't going to be like that, that the kingdom wouldn't be like that, that God wasn't like that. The kingdom would come, but it would come through the drinking of a cup of suffering, through a baptism, through something that Jesus had to do, had to undergo, which they could not yet take in. And then, in the garden, Jesus faced the choice himself. In Mark chapter 14, verse 36, it says this, "Abba, Father, all things are possible to you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I want, but what you want." If there was another way, Jesus would grasp it eagerly. Do you know, I love the honesty of the prayer, the lack of pretension. Oh, that we would be so honest in our prayers all the time. Yes, I wish we were. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus is wrestling for his life in prayer. The location is significant. Gethsemane literally means the oil press, where olives are pressed to make olive oil. And for Jesus, it has become a place of intense pressure, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. He's feeling that intense pressure. When life threatens to crush us, we too may wrestle in prayer. if God is our loving Abba, Father, Daddy, for whom everything is possible, why, we may wonder, does he not just remove the cup of suffering? We may ask this, does he really care? Is he really there? Is he not powerful enough to do what we're asking? These are the three questions often posed by those who have trusted God, but are struggling with a particular difficulty. These are Gethsemane questions. I don't know the shape of your unanswered prayers. We each arrive in Gethsemane, as it were, by different paths. But here's how it happened to me. I became a follower of Jesus as a teenager, as many of us did. I was part of a large and thriving youth group which sought to grow my faith in the all-powerful God, and that's a good thing. I thrived there. I became a youth leader and a Bible teacher myself. One evening in my late teens, I returned home from a holiday with friends to discover my mother had been admitted to hospital. I knew she'd been unwell, and the GP had diagnosed a tummy bug, but things had got worse. Infections broke out on her skin and they didn't heal, they got worse. A blood test revealed acute myeloid leukemia, a kind of blood cancer. It was advanced, and her life hung in the balance. The choice had to be made on whether to treat or just give palliative care. Treatment was chosen and was harsh on her already weak body. It meant long, long stays in hospital, and each night as my father and I visited her, we were never certain if that would be our last visit. Her life hung by a thread. You can imagine, as a young, faith-filled Christian, that I prayed. I prayed fervently for her to recover and be well again, that God would heal her, that she would be able to come back home with us. She was only in her early 50s, after all. My friends were praying. My church was praying. And for a short time, she went into remission and came home after 18 months. But it was short-lived. And the AML returned, and so did the harsh chemotherapy. I prayed all sorts of prayers. Prayers brimming with faith, claiming healing. Prayers of desperation, bargaining all kinds of deals with God. If he would heal her, I would serve him for the rest of my life. But she got worse. And within 6 months, she died. A few days later, I took a group of young people away to a youth camp. I could not afford to think about why God had not answered my heartfelt prayers for my mother's healing. I still trusted him in the midst of this deep, dark sorrow. I still felt his presence with me. I even felt he'd prepared me for my mother's death, that he'd pre-warned me that the answer was no to the healing. But a few years later, I was on a mission in Germany and suffering from a torn finger ligament. This was inconvenient, an injury playing football in goal. But I was meant to play bass guitar at a conference, a Christian conference, but I was unable to do that. I was in a lot of pain. And so a group of well-meaning fellow Bible students gathered around me and prayed, claiming healing for that hurt finger. After all, Wasn't it in God's best interest for me to be able to play bass guitar? Don't answer that. In short, nothing happened. They wandered off, and I was left in pain, wondering once again why God had not heard my prayer. Fast forward a few more years, and Dee and I were expecting our second child. After a long labour, Luke appeared, but he didn't breathe for very long. He was whisked away to neonatal intensive care, Dee was taken off for a bath, and I was left to pray that he'd be okay and back with us by the time Dee returned. But he wasn't. And then we were told he was very poorly. We prayed with all our strength. We phoned our church leaders who were anxiously awaiting news of a new baby and asked them to pray. And very soon after that, although it seemed like a lifetime to me, we were told we could hold him while they turned off life support because of a heart defect. He had no hope of living. He died in my arms before the machine could be switched off. That day, my faith in medicine changed. Naively, I had thought any young person could be treated and healed. I'd seen the television programs about the amazing miracles the medics could do. More darkly, my faith in God changed. Another unanswered prayer, when it really mattered. This wasn't just a parking space. This was a matter of life and death. The easily taught formulations of how God works and that in His presence all my problems disappear clearly didn't work. What I'd been told by countless well-meaning Christians was at best trite or at worst a cynical lie. And I'd been complicit in it. I had taught similar things. So where was God in all of this? Had He gone on holiday? Was He not powerful enough to answer these prayers? Or did He not care enough to help us in our need? Or was there something else? When our souls, like Christ's, are overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death, we do not necessarily pray like Jesus. In fact, we may barely pray at all, at least not in long, impressive and complicated prayers with complex techniques and formulations that will ensure that God will work. My prayers simply became heavy groans from deep within my spirit. In Gethsemane, I think we start to get a clue to the reality. As we listen to Jesus in Gethsemane, maybe there is something more real about His prayers than we often perceive. For many Christians, I think Gethsemane is glossed over on the way to the resurrection. But for me, it's packed with the reality of my faith in God. In Jesus' great sorrow and fear of what is approaching, He prays, "Abba, Father." A few short years ago, my young daughter Lily was bouncing on our trampoline in our garden at home. And we were pottering in the garden when I heard a sudden and unusually desperate cry, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy!" I ran the short distance to the trampoline to find Lily clutching her arm, which was obviously causing her huge pain. A quick trip to A&E and an X-ray confirmed a hairline break just below her elbow. Duly plastered, that is her arm, we returned home. Lily had some Calpol to ease her pain and I had something equally numbing. Gospel writer Mark returns from writing in Greek to the original Aramaic to make plain the intimacy of Jesus' prayer. of his cry out to his Father at the point of his pain. Abba, Father. In his great sorrow and fear of what is approaching, he prays, Abba, Father, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. All too often in our churches, we create a culture in which people feel compelled to have it all together and therefore to pretend. I wonder how many well-meaning Christians would have told Jesus not to be downcast and to celebrate that God already has the victory and to start singing and in his presence all our problems disappear. I wonder if we would have been praying that God would indeed take the cup of suffering from Jesus if we'd been his disciples there in that garden that night, already claiming the victory without the suffering. But Jesus prayed, Abba, Father. Mark 14:36, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me, yet not what I want, but what you want. I have found that there are times when I can just groan out to my Heavenly Father, just as Lily cried out to me in her pain. In all my pain, he has always been present. I have to tell you that that is my reality. That is my experience. Always a warm, supportive presence, but sometimes silent, muted. I have not always understood, but I have always trusted. In the difficult times that I've chronicled here, I have realized that I've often prayed the beginning part of Jesus' prayer in Gethsemane, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. So please do what I'm asking you. And I've stopped there. Don't we tend to do that with God? All things are possible. True. God wants to give his children good things. True. After all, it says that in the Bible. And it's so often proof text. But we need to read on. Jesus' prayer goes on. All things are possible for you, yet not what I want, but what you want. Not my will be done, but your will be done. And I wonder how many of us are bold enough, brave enough, mature enough, faith-filled enough to pray that last phrase of that nine-word prayer and mean it. And mean it without being arrogant enough to tell God what his will is. I've heard those prayers. Sometimes God will give an answer to our prayers and it's yes. I have experienced that in amazing ways. Sometimes God will answer our prayers with a not yet. And sometimes God will answer our prayers, no, not what you're asking. Not in that way. As we mature in faith, we begin to understand God's logic is really ours. And that his road to joy is often marked by suffering. That the world is full of people prepared to trust God for promotion, for prosperity, for healing, and for popularity. And I'm sure those things are good, because the Father does love to give good gifts to his children. It's certainly better to trust God for these things than to trust ourselves for them. But as we mature spiritually, God asks us to trust him in the hard times as well. There is faith for life, and there is a darker faith for death. There is faith for miracles, but also for pain. There is faith for God's will when it's our will too. And there's grace to trust God when His will is not what we would choose. I don't pretend it is any easier for us than for Christ to exercise this deeper, darker trust, because it comes from our woundedness. It comes from our suffering. But it is the most powerful of our prayers, because it is the most precious prayer to God. Will you pray that prayer? The prayer that Jesus prayed in Gethsemane. All things are possible for you, Lord. This is what I would like, but not my will, yours. And are we willing to count the cost, as well as the great blessing of that? God on mute. God in Jesus, in Gethsemane. God trusting with a darker faith. Your will be done, Lord.